and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Some people want to say curfews don't work. I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, they work.
City Council moves forward with giving the police power to issue a snap curfew for teens.
No amount of money will make James Gibson whole.
Chicago awards another multi-million dollar settlement to a wrongfully convicted man who spent almost 30 years in prison.
No one has the right to betray them by restricting their ability to grow, explore, and gather in any of Chicago's 77 neighborhoods.
And with that city council curfew vote, what do teens have to say? New reporting has some clues. And now to some of today's top stories. Former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel confirms he is eyeing a presidential run. In an interview with Crane Chicago Business, Emanuel, also a former congressman, White House chief of staff under President Obama, and most recently, U.S. ambassador to Japan, told Crane's, quote, "I'm looking at the field and most importantly, what I have to contribute." Governor J.B. Pritzker is also widely thought to be considering a run as well. Cook County officials are forecasting a budget shortfall of $211 million for the 2026 fiscal year. The projected gap is less than a shortfall of $218 million last year and significantly below the $409 million shortfall during the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2021. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle said in a statement, quote, "By making tough decisions, implementing budget best practices, and spending taxpayer dollars responsibly, the county has created a strong fiscal foundation as it navigates the unpredictability and volatility being created at the federal level." The Chicago City Council agreed today to pay $23.4 million to resolve three lawsuits alleging a wide range of misconduct by Chicago police officers. In the largest settlement, Chicago taxpayers will pay $14.75 million to James Gibson, who spent more than 29 years in prison after being convicted of a double murder he did not commit. Gibson says he was tortured into confessing by detectives directly supervised by disgraced former Chicago Police Commander John Burge. Here's what Gibson's lead attorney had to say after the settlement was confirmed.
When people think about Chicago, they think about former President Barack Obama. They think about First Lady Michelle Obama. They think about Michael Jordan and Oprah Winfrey. What they don't think about is Chicago is the wrongful conviction capital of America. Amen. The wrongful conviction capital of America.
Less than 6 months into the year, Chicago taxpayers have spent at least $189.3 million to resolve nearly two and a half dozen lawsuits, exceeding its budget to resolve lawsuits alleging police misconduct by more than $100 million. Now, that's according to city records. And we will hear from James Gibson later in the show. A reminder that street closures for Chicago's 2025 NASCAR race begin early Thursday morning. Starting at midnight, Balboa Drive will become fully closed between Columbus Drive and DeSable Lakeshore Drive. No parking restrictions will also be put in place along Columbus Drive in both north and southbound lanes between Jackson and Balboa. On Friday morning, curb lane closures will begin for both directions of Columbus Drive between Jackson and Balboa. The annual street race takes place July 5th and 6th. Up next, details about the city council curfew vote right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
The Chicago City Council voted 27-22 today to give the Chicago Police Department the power to preemptively impose a curfew anywhere in the city and begin enforcing it within just 30 minutes. This is in defiance of Mayor Brandon Johnson, who said the measure would hurt efforts to build trust between young people and police officers. Here's a bit of that debate from City Council.
This curfew ordinance is simply one more tool in that particular toolbox. It will work.
I will veto this ordinance because it is counterproductive to the progress that we have made in reducing crime and violence in our city. It would create tensions between residents and law enforcement at a time when we have worked so hard to rebuild that trust.
WTTW News reporter Heather Sharone joins us now live from City Hall with more on this decision. Heather, so after that narrow vote, all eyes, of course, are turning towards Mayor Brandon Johnson, who has told us what he's going to do.
That's right. He will issue the first mayoral veto in Chicago in 19 years to prevent this curfew ordinance from becoming the law of the land. As we heard, he says it will set back the progress he feels his administration has made in restoring trust between the police department and the youth of Chicago. Now, today's narrow vote came after a fierce debate where older people said that this measure would help them prevent violent teen takeovers that earlier this spring injured two people in Streeterville, but other alder people said it would be ineffective and it would essentially send a message to teens, particularly Black and Latino teens, that they were not welcome outside their own neighborhoods.
So Heather, today's vote, it came after months of debate and controversy. Remind us what CPD now has the power to do with this.
Well, assuming that the mayor does make good on his threat to veto, they would have had the power to essentially declare anywhere in the city off limits for people under 18 if they had knowledge of a planned large gathering that they had evidence to believe that would turn violent. Now, a lot of alder people had a lot of questions about how exactly that standard would be met. The issue became more confused and controversial after Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling told a federal judge that he would never enforce a curfew with just 30 minutes notice for fear that it would sweep up otherwise law-abiding teens just going about their business. So it was really not clear if this measure even was allowed to go into effect, how it would be used, but is another example of the differing opinions about how Chicago should be kept safe, even after the city has seen sustained and significant drops in both homicides and shootings since the beginning of the year.
And Heather, why was this so controversial?
Well, this is the fundamental issue that Chicago has been grappling with for decades. How do you balance the need to keep people safe in Chicago with people's civil liberties? That is why the Chicago Police Department is essentially under a federal court order to reform, and it is a direct challenge to what Mayor Brandon Johnson says he was elected to do, which was essentially to remake CPD into, yes, a law enforcement agency, but to beef up the city's other aspects to prevent crime from happening rather just enforcing the law once a crime had been committed.
All right. Heather Sharone at City Hall for us. Thank you. And we'll have more on this story later in the program. And, of course, you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Years, 4 months, and 7 days. That's how long James Gibson spent in prison for a crime he did not commit. The confession that led to Gibson's conviction was tortured out of him by Chicago police detectives under the direct supervision of John Burge, the disgraced former Chicago police commander who left a legacy of tortured confessions and wrongful convictions. As we mentioned earlier today, the Chicago City Council approved a $14.75 million settlement for Gibson's wrongful incarceration. And joining us to tell more of his own story is exoneree James Gibson. Thank you for joining us.
Wow, thank you for having me.
So you were exonerated in 2019. You received a certificate of innocence in 2020. What is the settlement today? What does it mean to you? What does it represent?
Well, can't really answer that question, what it represents. It just represents the continuation of a misjustice, so to speak.
A continuation?
Of misjustice.
How so? How does it continue?
A lot of people are making comments about James Gibson just got $15.5 million on a settlement. But if you look at all the other settlements, that's for the last 23 years, the last 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, verdicts on the Latinos, the Mexicans, the whites, they're getting $20, $25, $30 million. You know what I'm saying? And so somebody had contacted me and said $15 million is a lot of money. $15 million is a lot of money. Somebody ain't never been rich before. And so there's no justice, no peace in these cases. You know what I'm saying? These atrocities across Chicago is leading the nation in wrongful conviction. I told the city of Chicago in 2019 when I was released on the eve of the resurrection of Christ, my mother's birthday, April the 15th, the month she passed away, April the 2nd, that these cases was coming down. And right now, the city of Chicago got exposure of $2.5 billion. And so when you say $15 million, I'm happy. No, I'm not happy about that. It's just...
Do you feel like there's no dollar amount that makes up for what you've lost?
Now I know dollar. There's no dollar amount that can make up for what I lost. I lost my mom. I lost everything. You know what I'm saying? I never got a chance to be married. I went off to the army. I never served my country. You know what I'm saying? I never did the things that my mother set out for me to do. I graduated out of high school, going to college. I did everything. I played by the rules. You know what I'm saying? I lost 30 years, 29 years, 4 months, and 7 days. I can't get that back.
As we mentioned, John Burge and the detectives that worked for him, they became known for torturing confessions out of dozens of men. And for a long time, no one believed these men when they told people what was happening to them. When did you realize that what had happened to you was part of a much bigger system-wide problem?
I realized there was a much bigger problem when I had got into from IDOC to DOC. I started litigating and filing motions back in 1990 on the record. And when I got into...
While you were still incarcerated.
Mm-hmm. And so I became a jailhouse lawyer inside the prison. And when I became a jailhouse lawyer, so to speak, and I was in Pontiac, Stateville, and Menard, I started realizing that... I started meeting people from the south side, the north side, the west side, and east side of Chicago, and they all had the same story. And we never met each other before in our lives.
So you all met in prison and started learning each other's stories,
It wasn't that they was learning each other's stories. I was the lawyer. I'm the voice of the voice. You know what I'm saying? I was the jailhouse lawyer, so I had the best jobs in the prison. I was the gallery worker. I was the warden's porter. I worked the yard detail, so I had access to all of the prisoners where other prisoners didn't have access to. And so by me having this movement, free movement throughout the whole system, I was able to communicate and find out, man, you from out west? You from out south? You from out east? You from out west? You from out north? Then I started looking at the brothers that was coming out of Englewood off 57 in Aberdeen, and it's like 16 off my block alone. My nephew, Robert Robinson, who was just released not too long, a month ago, did 28 years and 10 months. You know what I'm saying? So I started saying, wow. It's something going on, but at the same time, nobody was able to put the pieces together because they was never able to move around to be able to communicate. And so I was the ears and the voice of the land. And so I started understanding what was going on. I'm like, man, this is bigger than just me. This is a pattern in practice. This, somebody got to be on notice about this atrocity. They've been stealing our brothers and cousins, our auntie, your uncles and grandfathers. And so that's how I realized it was something bigger than me.
So you just heard the reporting from Heather Sherrone, well, not from Heather Sherrone, but earlier in the show about the settlements that were reached, that the city councils had to make over the years, hundreds of millions of dollars. What does that tell you? How does that sit with you?
Well, I ain't got to hear nothing from what the city done told me about how it worked. I've been the one putting these cases out since 1990, from the south side, the west side, the north side, and the east side of Chicago. I've been the one sending these BDs, GDs, Stones, Vice Lords, L. Rookins, LGBTs, and all the rest of these brothers, the Latinos and the Mexicans.
So you're saying gang members who are gang members who were convicted wrongfully convicted.
False imprisonment. You know, if one time I just went crazy and just started overturning cases just to be overturning them. But then I started realizing that, you know what I'm saying, that it was a misjustice for me to use injustice like this. So I started overturning cases that was only innocence. And then I realized that it was hundreds of Latinos, it was hundreds of African Americans from the south side and the north side and the east side of Chicago that had the same officers.
How did you put all of those skills to work for yourself?
Well, I put all those skills to work for myself in the county jail. It started in the county jail when I had came from court one day and I seen a Perry Mason show. And when I noticed that in the county jail, all of the inmates or offenders or whatever you want to name them, they was all looking up in the air. because the TV was in the air. And I came off the court call, and I asked the judge about another judge and some photographs that they had took of my injuries, and he told me to action lawyer, and the other person said objection, and so I asked the judge, what do that mean? And he told me to action lawyer, so they put me out the courtroom, and so as I was going back to the cell house, I seen the guy, they was watching TV, and Perry Mason was on there, and he said objection.
So that's the rest is history, it sounds like. We know that you're very close with your mother, and sadly she was she passed while you were incarcerated. What do you think she would say about this settlement?
She would tell me the same thing that she told me when I first was in foster prison. She told me, "Baby, you're gonna have to do about 20 years." She said, "Them white folks, they ain't gonna play fair with you." She said, "But you coming home." She said, "But you're going to have to get a few things out of your heart and for the Lord to do what he need to do for you." And she'd be saying right now, she sit on the right-hand side of God and Lord and Savior, "I got to believe it because there is a God in heaven, that it's over now, baby."
You've been involved in social justice activism since your release. What is next for you?
Well, that's understatement when you say I've been involved with social justice. I've been involved with social justice impact since 1990. I've been involved with social impact before they had a social impact.
So I imagine that's something that you'll continue.
I have been continuing. I am going forward. It ain't something I'm going to continue to move forward across the land. I've been out. I was released on the eve of the resurrection of Christ in 2019, given all my rights to certificate of innocence. I've since then formed my own foundation, the first of its kind digital archive, the Clara and the James Giffen Foundation. It was captured all of the work that I've been doing for the last 36 years, and all of these cases I've been overturning, costing the city of Chicago $759 million.
And I know that you're a musician as well. We will have to have you back to talk about that next time because we are out of time. James Gibson, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you.
And thank you, too, for having me. I'm James Gibson on the land.
Up next, reporting about what teens may think about the new snap curfew law. As we heard earlier, City Council narrowly passed a controversial snap curfew ordinance this afternoon following months of debate. The measure is aimed at curbing large gatherings of teens, but for many young people in Chicago, there aren't many places for them to gather and socialize. Joining us to discuss the snap curfew measure and why it's harder for teens to find places to come together are Chima Ikoro, Community Engagement Editor at Southside Weekly, and Corley Jay, community investment reporter at The Tribe. Thanks to you both for joining us. So The Tribe and Southside Weekly, the two of you have been working on collaboration to cover this snap curfew debate. Corley, let's talk about the terms, teen trends or gatherings versus teen takeovers, they're sometimes called. What exactly are these events and what are some of the misconceptions people might have about them?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me, Brandis. So teen trends, teen takeovers are when teens come together and they plan these gatherings in advance, mostly downtown. And it's been a lot of misconceptions about violence. You know, some of these teen trends have ended with people being hurt. One notably ended with a teen losing his life in Millennium Park was led to a curfew. And so since then, there has been a lot of talk about how to kind of prevent these teen trends and gatherings from happening.
So, Chima, how do teen gatherings, how do they provide an outlet for teens?
Yeah, so it gives them a place to essentially, well, they're bored, right? They're spending time at the house a lot, especially in the summertime when they're out of school, et cetera. So they might not have this after school programming. And especially young people who are coming from neighborhoods where maybe there's not a lot to do recreationally in their neighborhood, or those recreational activities might be in places that aren't safe for them to go. These teen trends or takeovers are providing them with the space to be able to meet up with their peers, their age mates, their classmates, friends that they have that live in other neighborhoods. It's giving them a neutral setting to be able to meet up with other teenagers, and also just to have fun, find something to do during the summertime, et cetera.
At the same time, unfortunately, as you mentioned, Coralie, some of these teen gatherings have led to activities that make people concerned for their safety. What have people that you spoke with said about how the violence can be prevented?
Well, my colleague Tonya did some reporting, talking to actual teens about that, and just having more safe spaces for them to go. They feel like we kind of curb it because they don't have any places to congregate. It kind of can lead to some stuff going down. But they want people to know that it's not all teenagers, right? And that was a problem that they had with something like a snap curfew, kind of imprisoning or criminalizing teens who may be at the wrong place at the wrong place or at the wrong times looking for something to do.
And I think some of your colleagues also, Chima, they've also reported on the impact of curfews, whether or not they work, because as we just heard from Heather Sharon's reporting, City Council did in fact pass the snap curfew ordinance. The mayor has said he would veto it, but what is the impact of a curfew?
Well, Jim Daly, the investigative editor at Southside Weekly, he did some really great reporting on the fact that there's really no answer to that. It's actually unclear whether or not curfews keep people safer or not. And the issue is that, providing this idea of safety in one place can then create this bubble of unsafety or violence, et cetera, in another place. So the curfews are not actually meeting the issue at its root. And if they're not meeting downtown, then they're meeting somewhere else. It almost seems as if we're trying to segregate this violence to their own neighborhoods or their own communities and saying, like, yeah, these areas are just off limits because that's what's most valuable to us. And that doesn't actually solve the issue. So it's actually hard to determine whether or not curfews actually keep people safe. And even in the city of Chicago, the enforcement of curfews seems to be varying and it's not always consistent. And so even with the curfew that we had before this curfew ordinance was passed, it's not like it was being enforced on a consistent basis, and sometimes it's even weaponized to be used in a case-by-case situation as opposed to being a blanket thing. So it's hard to even tell.
Also, Chima, and based on your reporting, you've spoken to parents about the challenges of raising a teen in 2025 in Chicago. What have they said?
They said that, well, one, social media is influencing a lot of the ways they go about communicating with each other and navigating the world around them. And that's had its benefits, but it's also had, some problems because obviously, like, if you're trying to mitigate what's going on amongst teenagers and how they're influencing each other, the easiest way for them to be able to connect with each other without supervision, et cetera, is on social media. And like I said, that can provide them with some freedom and autonomy, but that also creates a space for young people, because we have to remember they're children, to be able to influence each other to handle things, go about things in a way that may not be the safest. But that being said, though, these parents are also expressing that the reason why a large chunk of the time they're spending socializing with each other is online is because there's not as many things to do out in the real world, right? So one of the parents mentioned how she had a pool in her public housing complex. Where's the public pool at? I can tell you where the nearest public pool is to me, right? Or how a lot of young people were gathering in Milwaukee. One of the parents grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they were taken to the streets because they were bored when they were out of school, and the city decided, hey, let's just move y'all to a place that's safer. Y'all can take over this stadium parking lot for a couple hours and, stay out the way and not be in traffic, as opposed to telling them they can't do one thing and not giving them an alternative, right? So I think the main thing is that young people are needing a place or places to feel safe and also to feel autonomous. And there are things taken away from them without giving solutions.
Yeah, Coralie, you looked into some of that, like the lack of amenities and third spaces for teens compared to in the past. What were some of those amenities and what happened to them in about 30 seconds?
Yeah, we had places, safe places for teens, like teen clubs, also known as juice bars, that no longer exist. They didn't exist when I was growing up, so I know that kids today have no idea what that was like. Also, we had malls that kids were able to go to, teenagers, but those have long gone out, you know, because of online shopping, but also because of the youth escort policies. You can't go to malls at the weekends, at the hours, after like 5 o'clock without a parent or an escort with you. I also know that Navy Pier has the same kind of escort policy. So these places, these teen safe places have dwindled. And with the lack of the people, the teens have a lack of place to kind of meet up. And that's why they choose places like downtown to do so.
Okay. Reporting from Coralie J and Chima Okoro. Thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that is our show for this Wednesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.